sort of manly, but anyway.
I'm trying to be specific pretty quick.
Yeah, so those, anyway, those days you go into Granville and around, not Davy, but Rob's, that's not here, there was these secondhand stores. I guess they're pawn shops back in the day, and they'd have guitars and they'd do electric guitars.
Sure, I remember
that. I used to bug my parents about that. Finally it paid off. Got electric guitar in 1964. That was a big deal to me. So that's, and then the following, so over the summer I started jamming with other kids, and in the fall, that's when I got to join my first band called Rhodes. Did many instrumentals. That was with the Hines brothers, who lived down those days on Dunbar, must have been.
Oh.
Not Alma. Dunbar and Fort, right in the corner.
Uh-huh.
The building's still there. It's on the southeast corner, right in the corner. They had the corner suite above it. I guess they're like a single mum behind it. I don't know if they ever, where the dad was.
Uh-huh.
Ron and Mervyn Hines. Merv went to Bing, right? And so I showed him some stuff. And another guy called Blair Thornton. I can't remember, he did 13th in something like Waterloo or something. He went on to join a band called Rock and Turn Overdrive.
Oh yeah, my goodness.
And yeah, well, he couldn't play bar chords in those days, so I used to play rhythm because he liked to do that.
Okay.
Anyway, so that was the first band I was in. I didn't have an amplifier, but I had a guitar at least.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. I was going to say a little bit more specific about Dunbar. I'm sure I can remember what it was. I'm sure it was fascinating. Prompt me to ask
you. Okay, I'll help you. Because I need to know some specifics about what it was like being part of this particular era.
Right.
And playing it, and maybe doing drugs, or what. All that. Whole things about, that kind of stuff.
All that. Well, okay, up until I was 15, I would say I was pretty, nothing really much happened. Ordinary. Then, I'll give you a little glimpse. This is something to myself, I just remembered.
Okay.
I would be about 12, so 62, let's say, going to Bing. And sometimes I take the bus, very seldom. A big treat. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at 49th, up on Marine Drive and Dunbar, there was a stop there, the 49th bus stop there, going north towards the 41st. Luke stopped. Okay. And I remember there was a woman who'd get on, and I'd see her occasionally coming back, like in the end of the day. Very, very seldom. I suppose she was about 50. I thought she was incredibly old, incredibly nice looking, because she had, I thought, didn't I use that one? She had very black hair.
Yeah.
It was very, I must have been dyed black, and she was heavily corseted.
Oh,
and
really?
I suppose what she was, looking back on it now, she probably worked for one of the department stores.
Oh, yeah.
This is probably her going to work.
Mm-hmm.
That evening.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a little glimpse of what I saw, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on Dunbar. So that'd be about 62-ish. Okay, when I got my electric guitar, that's when I started circulating more and meeting more people. Then we went down to, my parents went down to Boston for a year. My dad had sabbatical and went to MIT.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started really breaking out of it, because that summer, okay, during the high school year itself, I met you guys, and I won't go into that. We ended up this summer, my friend Ole Yule, who lived at 17th in Dunbar, or 17th in Wallace, I guess it was, or Crown, maybe it was Crown, he came down for the summer to join me there, and I said, why don't you play bass? So he learned bass for the summer.
Okay.
And because we went with this guy called Dwight, his parents had a cabin on the base of Lake Sunapee, that's in New Hampshire. So we went there and we just hung out all summer, and a lot of kids our own age hung around. Of course, this big pile of kids, and we drive everywhere. It's like cars, this is America.
Yeah.
And one got a scooter, so three was a climb on it, like a Vespa, we was zooming on that. I remember one time we must have been pretty bored occasionally, because there was a pleasant lake, Lake Sunapee. There's a wharf went to the end of the lake, right into it, I guess, and stopped. So we were all just bored, so we just got all dressed up, smoked cigarettes, and walked straight up into the wharf.
Oh.
Like, the locals something to talk about for quite a while.
Yeah, right. How funny.
But to get to the point, when I came back from that summer of playing in a band the whole summer, basically, I think we were pretty awful. We played a few times, actually, a few couple of gigs. Nonetheless, I started definitely identifying with getting a band together. Mm-hmm. And that also, you know, being drunk and stuff like that. So that kind of started, I guess, then. So I'd be in grade 12 at that point. Beginning of grade 12, kind of thing. I don't know how this happened. Some guy got a Y, called me up, and he needed me to play guitar. There's a band out in Burnaby. Mm-hmm. So grade 12, I'm at my parents' place, we're not in Collingwood. Called me up, and also they needed a bass player. So I'm fine, I know a bass player. And I didn't really, but I drafted my friend Simon Kendall. He was younger than me. So I, whatever. So I said, okay, well, here's how you play bass.
Oh, my goodness. So you showed him
how to play bass.
Oh, my goodness.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
He said, well, that's right, because my friend Brian Hart, who lived at 10th and Crown, he's a bass player. He was in a band called Yellow Brick Road. He was supposed to play bass, and he jammed out, but he left his stuff with me.
Oh.
So, all right, he's not going to work. So I lent his stuff to my friend Simon. I showed Simon how to play bass. These kids came out from Burnaby, drove us back to the gig, and it was terrible. I mean, we weren't that bad overall as a band, but Simon, of course, couldn't play.
Oh, yeah.
So he faked it very well, I thought. So the other kids were, the people who hired us were grumbling quite a bit, but yeah. As far as they're concerned, I was a great guitarist, the crowd responded, so they had to put up with me.
Yeah, and, right, yeah.
And then they said, well, they didn't think they should pay Simon. I said, well, either you pay him or I leave.
So,
and in those days, it was for $250, so $50 each.
Amen.
So that was, I guess, one of my first paid, yeah, probably my first real paid gig. Uh-huh. I played a couple times in New Hampshire, a few times down there. Uh-huh. And then before that, in Vancouver, oh yeah, oh, right, okay, I played at a frat party in late 64 with the Rogues. And then in 65, that's the summer, or just around, it must be summer, just around then, my friend Gordon Walkshaw, we had a band, we threw together just on occasion. We played at Jeffrey Cohen's birthday party. He lived on, parents lived on Marine Drive, I guess it's one of the Marines, and it's a big place there.
Oh, yeah.
So I, you know, Jeff was just a kid, so I was concerned because he was about 5 years younger.
Yeah, right.
But I thought about those adults. And I remember calling my parents and telling them that I was back, you know, so this kid. I was most indignant. I wanted to know where I was. I just wanted to come and get me. I don't know, get my father to come and get me. But I'd learned from the last time I played to the frat fraternity guys. Uh-huh. If I said where I was, my parents were going to get me.
Right.
So I didn't call them where I was this time.
Oh.
So I got to play the entire evening. I had to be called back early. And, I think it was like $20 for the band. Oh, and part of that money had to be a portion of rental for an amplifier, a guy called Rick Annans. He also went to the band at that point. He played later, he was playing a band called Tom Workman. He was a big guy. So I had Rick's amplifier in my house, so I said, well, a couple of dollars. So, okay, here I am playing guitar, just starting to get into being, I'd like to be a professional musician, trying it out. And then, but really, the first time you're asking about QBAs and drugs and stuff, the first time I really got drunk was in grade 12 on the Easter holiday. Okay? So I and Bob Griffiths and John Westland, his parents own the Western Plumbing, that's 17 years old, and Bob's parents lived in Langara. And all my friends. So, and a guy called Tony Cartland, who parents lived on 8th and Sassamath. So we got in Bob's car, he just got his license, so took his mother's car, and we went over to Seashell.
Oh.
And those days are pretty, not as near as buildings there. So.
Yeah,
and then we arrived there in the evening, so we couldn't see anything anyway. There was a lot of old trees, there was a grove around here, but an empty place to park, more or less, on a hill. And got very drunk, and a very pleasurable experience, never that drunk before. It was a very cold Easter holidays, surprisingly cold.
Mm.
So I found that if I fell down, I would bounce.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's extraordinary, yeah. I mean, quite a sensation.
Oh, my God.
Well, when we can play guitar, so I sat on a tree stump and play guitar, but I found he was so funny that why bother? So, anyway, I felt terrible next day, of course, but we were in the middle of a clear-cut area down the hill for, I guess, the power line or something. That was the beginning, I suppose, of my short career with various drugs. I didn't do a lot, but what I did to excess, of course. But then, so that'll be from 67 through to about 69, I guess. And at this point, well, what can I tell you? I'm not sure it's really true of Dunbar history, except yeah, I was in a band, we were called the Mike, well, we had no real name, but eventually sometimes we were called the Mike Meadows Blues Band, by default. Mm-hmm. And we played the Student Union Building at UC, so it was brand new, so we were one of the first bands to play there. We played there about three or four times in the first year, so it was quite a lot for one band. Mm-hmm. Played quite a few times. We were together about 18 months. Peggy Matheson was doing big, she was quite a comedian singer. Mm-hmm. And me, Simon Kendall, and Harry Klinsky, another big guy, and Peggy Ford. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun, I guess, looking back on it. We played places like down at Fort, the Bistro, Fort Arbutus, that would be. I guess our highlights of that then aren't related to Dunbar, of course. So, I know. I lived at, so this would be around the same time. It was 60, fall of 67, I think. Probably fall of 67, and 68, into 68, say, the summer. I lived with a girl called Janet Sawyer. Her mother actually lived at 8 and Sassamath. This would be into a lot of costs. We moved in together, guy called Bob McCarroff, Dr. McCarroff. He had a house on 11th and Courtney, I guess, pretty well. Uh-huh. He was a bit of an architect, I should say, because he wished to have been an architect. So he bought these houses and fixed them up or not. And this one was sort of in a major disrepair. And I remember, so the five of us lived there. Janet and me, John Westland and Jackie Bowers. And Wendy Burke, another Bingite. Kind of all went to Bing, it seems.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, I guess that's what you've been doing.
That's right. So the sort of living together was starting to be
something to do. Yeah, definitely. As I say, it's late 67, that would have been.
Yeah.
And then I remember the neighbors being a bit annoyed.
Yeah, right.
The house, not so much with us, but because the house is dump. They wanted, like, they had tar paper on the outside.
Oh,
still.
Dear.
They used completely reconditioning it, and they didn't like the look of it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's when we started, and two houses down, going west, there was a band. Two people from our band called Mother Tucker's Yellow Duck. They're kind of older than us, but.
Yeah.
So this is getting the heavier, right, definitely. Well, being all personal, what can I tell you? I mean, about history now. Questions?
Just trying to be specific about the drugs of choice were liquor.
Oh, drugs of choice.
Yeah, drugs of choice or liquor.
Well, for me, I suppose it was alcohol to start, but I wasn't really keen on alcohol. My friends were, but I found them not a bit much.
Uh-huh.
I tried some various forms of speed, like ephedrine and methadrine.
Uh-huh.
And they're really extraordinary, because you know, one time it took quite a lot, and it makes you very awake, right?
Uh-huh.
And I felt my hairs were standing on end.
Oh my God!
Very, very odd feeling. I went riding up to, in the middle of the night, riding up to my old elementary school, along Chancellor, all around the university area, and I ended up trying to go to see my old elementary school, U Hill. And of course, it's pitch black. I didn't realize on the road there was a chain across it.
Oh my God.
I was riding a girl's bike at the time. I ran right into the chain and, of course, fell down, straight down.
Oh,
of course, because there was no crossbar there.
Right.
And I just hit my pubic bone, I guess, rather than anything else.
Oh.
So that was most extraordinary.
Oh
But the effects, not so much the bike crash, but all of later, the ephedrine, I guess it's like overdose later, because I felt it terrible for 2 days. Like, awake for 2 days, like a whole weekend, basically. Anyway, not that you really want to go into that, but that was interesting. Acid, I want to go on LSD there, took it a few times. I like that, that was fun.
You like that?
Oh yeah, that was good.
Does it give you dreams or something?
No. What, for me, what it did is it kind of shifted my focus, shall I say. So you see everything as it kind of is, but you can also see it appearing to be slightly differently. That's a bit vague. Also, what it did is sort of eliminated the barriers between things. So instead of just me sitting on a couch, me being becoming part of the couch, and vice versa. You built into it. Well, kind of like Dali's paintings were different.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of a nice sensation.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, see, I remember one time taking that, at the Easter Bean at this, I think the second beach is called, on Stanley Park. My friend Lloyd Griffiths got the acid then. And that was fun, except I had to come home early to babysit my acid brothers and sisters.
Oh.
My parents were all annoyed that I was taking acid. And, anyway, so there was that. I must interrupt for a short time here, but probably stuff like morphine, but that was from the hospital.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to use your washroom. Tell me about morphine. How did morphine come to the hospital?
Oh, that was from the hospital. That was this diagnosis with 1974, I think. I felt it was ill. My doctor, Dr. Norwell, Dave Norwell, he lived in 42nd and Dunbar, if you will.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We struck a bit of friendship because he was into music as well. Anyway, he came over to the house call and said, "Where are you?" "I have the flu." And I think 10 days later, my appendix burst.
Oh, right.
So I went into the hospital and was there for 6 weeks. Anyway, that was kind of interesting. But recreational drugs, marijuana, of course.
Marijuana.
That was fun. But in those days, because remember, marijuana was being a bit of a novelty, it was, to my generation at least, it was much milder. I mean, you'd have to try hard to get a bunch of that stuff. And of course, they got numbers, I think it's something like some big 1-3%. Cannabis is a natural thing, but, and of course, about 5 years or so, then it's gone up to 10% because people started cultivating it. And then 17%, and that's when I was down in the late 70s, north of San Francisco, and just the harvest time it turned out. And so people say I had a ton of sensimilla, they call it. And that was about 17% stuff, and that was like a paralytic storm, I must admit.
Really?
Of course, you smoke dope, then what happens is you get slightly, among other things, set pressure, but also you can get paranoid. So if you're paranoid, you say, "What if there's a fire? What if I can't move?" And then you really make yourself paranoid.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, good point. Well, anyway, and of course nowadays it's much worse than that. Easy, like a moon bird, what they call skunkweed. So bad. It's it must be about 35%.
Oh,
it's unbelievably strong. It'll make you sick unless you're used to it. You've got to build a tolerance to it in the first place. So, now mind you, I don't smoke much, you don't understand this. It's just something, in general, as far as I'm concerned, this is a very general thing. I don't see any point in doing any form of dope unless it's fun.
Yeah, right.
And if you can learn something from it. So that means to me, chronic use is something I've never gone into for, like chronic drinking or smoking or anything. Because it loses its effect, second time.
Right.
So I'm trying to think once, see what happens, but. I think the term is binging in moderation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
I'm not a big, I was never really a big drug guy. It was fun to do. I mean, even smoking tobacco always made me sick, so I never really got into that. Tried it when I was 16.
Oh, yeah.
But that's about it. let's see.
There you go.
Is that enough?
Yeah, probably.
Drugs? I mean, because there's not much more to say.
No, I do.
Oh, well, yeah, no. Because see, now that I'm moving See, after about 18, I moved, after 20, how's that?
Okay.
That's when I moved away from Dunbar.
Ah.
So all my later years, really, were down in Kitsilano.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I can tell you something about that. That's a whole different matter.
That's a whole different matter, yeah.
I'm just trying to remember Point Grey, as it's called, Dunbar.
Right.
In the late 60s. Well, there's a fair amount of opposition to people wanting along here. That's because the police were always very antagonistic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So I couldn't have just walking in side streets.
Oh, terrible. You couldn't walk in the main street and the police would just sort of shadow you.
Oh, no, they would stop you and ask them what you're doing.
Oh,
my God. Mind you, I had bare feet.
Oh, I see. There you go.
Yeah, about 3 years.
But that's terrible, though. I mean, it's...
Well, that's the way it was. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I was brought up to be, well, in elementary school, you know, I remember the police coming, giving them talks, you know, police are friends, blah, 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 blah. But then, by the time I came to being a teenager, the police were not quite so friendly. And then, as out of high school, they're definitely eventually they're portrayed as our enemies. Whether they are or not, it's a whole different matter. I realize about that nonsense. It's just, they're just a force like any other force, like electricity or something, like water. You can use it for good or bad. But I guess growing up, or being in Point Grey at that time, a lot of the Point Grey people were less than pleased with the idea of long-haired loads walking around. And of course, that's back in the days of the Americans with the border skirmish in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
They never declared it a war. There's a baby boom compounded by a sort of worldwide feeling of unrest, from Prague, the Russians in 68, and then, of course, in Mexico, there was a lot of unrest, just around that time. And, of course, the Americans had their war in Vietnam.
Yes, did you know any deserters at all?
Oh, yeah. But they, not really when I was doing that back, that's a little privilege when I was living here.
That's
war.
Right, yeah.
So, I guess I'd have to stop about 1970 there for
me.
I mean, I can tell you as much as you want, but
yeah.
I don't want to bore you, especially. So,
I'm
just trying to cast back a bit. So, what have I missed? I guess the last bit of Dunbar-ish wasn't really. It was more, I was living down in Fitzpower's place.
You know,
he divorced, before going through a divorce at that point. So he lived down on 2nd and, Bellevue?
Bellevue.
Yeah, I guess it was Bellevue and Tallview, more or less. So, after we got turned out, no, before we moved into Bob McCarroll's place on 11th and Courtney, we lived at, stayed at this place on Bellevue. And some of the years were a little less sympathetic, and some of them were very sympathetic. Want to join in, that's fine. This goes back quite a bit now. I'm just staying overnight at my friend Bob Griffith's place. This is Langara. Is this too far away from Langara and Tolley?
Probably, but that's okay.
Okay, well,
if it talks about the era or what was acceptable.
It was the era because we used to go down to Spanish Banks and get up early in the morning and, you know, steal apples and stuff. But also, I remember Spanish Banks before that had a lot of sand on it. It was more of a mud flat. I guess it's of interest. You know, waiting up there and just squashing through the mud instead of on the sand, which is much nicer. And of course, I remember Spanish Banks itself before the road and all the parking lots were put in. So the road used to go right up to 1958 when the beaches were closed. It was a pretty hydro tunnel and all the pollution. Shit in the water.
Right, you did.
So, hydro tunnel, I'll get back. I remember that invading. I remember when I was going in, it started seeing like a big hole down with shoring. Sides collapsing. A friend from South Australia, George McKinnon there. His dad was a child psychologist. These tell my parents was along with me. Intuitively, I might add, a little weird. But I like when George is supposed to get radio and stuff. Put the radio on. Remember the songs. His dad, or his mother had a Mark. And for George's birthday, his dad took us out on a special trip to Oslo to see Ben Hur. I've never seen Cleopatra, the film with William Taylor, at the Stanley. That'd be just around the same era, maybe about a year or two later, somewhere around there. Early 60s, early 60s. So, early 60s Dunbar, what else might I know? What have you been thinking of?
Yeah, well, you were looking to the U.S. for your kids, right? I mean, everybody was.
The Americans?
Yeah, I mean, the American culture, do you think? I mean, we had this fellow come up from Berkeley, and he was trying to incite everybody to riot at UBC.
Oh, I remember the faculty club, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a little later for me. I mean,
is that really?
Because I was living. Oh, well, no, that's sort of. Remember that? Yeah, because a friend of mine went there.
Terry Rubin.
Yeah. My friend Pat Hoppus and my friend Karan Carr, they went to that beach. Now, I wasn't really looking for Americans especially, though, sure I was, but I didn't know it was American.
Yes.
I came to Canada, it was great, it's Canadian.
It's Canadian, yes.
I didn't really realize it was all American at the beginning. I thought this is what Canada's like. What I really remember about early Canada, well, to me, my earliest Canada, was getting here, and my parents would go explore into the Gulf Islands a few times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, must have been quite a bit. And going to the Horseshoe Bay back then was like a tiny ferry terminal. And what really epitomized Canada to me was all those rocks coming out of the water, arbutus trees. I mean, you don't see them anywhere else. So that was Canada to me. We went over to Bowen Island every year. My parents went to places in Bowen Island. And then we'd travel to some of the other Gulf Islands. Of course, back in those days, there's still quite a few English cars here in the woods. Especially up in Dunbar.
Yeah, you must have.
There's quite a few, Zodiacs and Ford Zodiacs and horses, cars. I think more, in Point Grey than in other parts of Vancouver. I didn't see much of the rest of Vancouver except we went to a P&E, that kind of thing.
Right.
That's just an adventure. I don't know. Maybe I'm not the best guy to ask about that.
No, that's okay.
I don't really remember that much.
Well.
Remember the buses, the trolley buses, of course. I think it's 7 cents, and I went up to 10 cents for school kids. Then adults were paying 15 of them. So you'd have a school pass, a reduced fare. Any more questions?
No, I think that's about it. I mean, I got the idea of what you wanted to do in your spare time.
I can remember places that I didn't actually go into, like the old Alma Theater down on Alma and Broadway. I remember seeing the track, the streetcar tracks, just north of north of Broadway, I should say, on Alma, but I didn't actually see the streetcars running.
No.
That was quite a bit before my time.
Yeah, I think it all stopped in the
50s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came here in 56, so I can. A little different.
I
think they went up to 15,
So the Highbury Tunnel bit, you noticed that shoring at that point?
That's right, the shoring, and then I noticed down at the other end around.
Marine Drive or.
No, the other.
Highbury. Fourth and Highbury?
Yeah, Fourth and Highbury.
Yeah.
That was that area, because it was a big army area there, right?
That's right.
All the kids there went to the Fort Binger, of course. From around 7th, well, I guess below Broadway, like north of Broadway, north of 10th, I should say, down to 10th, down to 4th. It smelled pretty bad there.
Yeah.
It still does. Oh, yeah. That I never noticed that before.
Yeah.
I think that must be the effects of the tunnel. There must be some outlet somewhere. It's just,
they sound like interfered with the outlet somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to put it in there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not very good. With regard to the Army base, there was a couple of kids I was doing music with, one in particular called Phil Croucher. This kind of strange guy. Last I heard of him, he was working on a death ray.
Oh my God.
Now when I was 14, again, that's what I was saying, I was 14, these two guys, Phil Croucher and that, 15, working for him. A guy called Mike Clark, he's being 14. He lived around very, less than that, 23rd or so, below 22nd, 23rd, somewhere around there, and Collingwood, Blenheimish, around that area.
Oh, yeah.
What I remember about him, I kind of admired the way he was nuts, but he made his own electric guitar. And he actually wound his own pickups. Now, unfortunately, the paint he used was some kind of marine stuff, so it didn't dry properly. And even worse, the pickups dropped one, and so unwinding. There's thousands of windings on there. But he persevered, and the thing I remember most about was that he started building his own hovercraft.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, very inventive guy.
Yeah.
He did a motorbike engine, and it was quite a small one, but it sounds like a waiting pool.
Okay.
I don't think it ever will.
No.
So that's Dunbar. But so there's plenty of eccentrics in Dunbar.
There were.
I think the English cars is of some significance, though, because a lot of districts we had mainly American, because we were swamped with American stuff here. Mm-hmm. But there was, and there was, you know, things like Renaults and Volkswagens, and, you know, more European stuff.
Yeah, there was Volkswagen.
Yeah, this would be well before the Japanese. And of course, Woodward's, you know, the Christmas time is nice, the shopping there. But I mean, that's a whole different thing. What? Oh, I guess there was the IGA, is that? Not IGA, the Safeways.
Yeah.
There's one at 41st, so I can just remember this. That's 41st and Dunbar itself on the northwest corner. And it moved premises, the small one, the horse, the mechanical horse. Moved over to Collingwood and 41st, and then became an expanded one there.
Right.
I think they kept the horse, they took the horse with them.
Yeah.
And then I think they lost the horse somewhere. Now there was another Safeway, 41st and I think it's Uke Street.
Oh.
It's in Carousel, just before Arbutus. Another one there.
That's right.
His drugstore now. So I guess I saw, like when I first came to Canada, I saw these little supermarkets out there, great. And I guess what's happened since then, of course, in my lifetime, they've expanded, and now there's the superstores and that. It's kind of funny looking back on it, thinking, well, you know, in those days, the cashiers were touching the numbers.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have, you know, wasn't automated. So there's more people working then, but they all made a living.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have less people working, and everyone's complaining they don't have enough money.
Yeah, right.
It's curious.
Yeah. But they do have enough money because there seems to be more money floating around now. I mean, people are buying electronics.
I think it's more concentrated, the money now. I think, see, back in the 50s, in my impression, everyone was a millionaire, at least, where I grew up anyway.
Yeah, true.
And I think now, sure, there's tons of millionaires, but a lot of people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I lived through the late 60s when there's a big leveling. It didn't really matter too much where your income was.
Right.
And then, and then after that, it's come around again. It does matter where your income is.
Sure.
Only now it's, well, to some people at least, so the people of my generation who went through the hippie stage, I think were much more accepting bunch in general, I would say, because they did it.
Yeah.
Those who survived.
Yeah.
But those who didn't tended to be pretty square, and I guess it's coming back to them now. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're not particularly free people, should we say.
Yeah.
Is that it? Have I told
you
enough?
Yeah, I think you're kicking your tire enough, probably.
Oh, no, I don't want that. It's just, I'm running out of inspiration.
I'm running out of inspiration. Yeah, we don't want to keep going through that. All right. Okay, what do you like?
What I like best about food was my father got to cook, which is once in a blue moon.
See,
my mother would go, she had a kid. So, he would do the cooking. So that's when we had things like apple sandwiches.
Oh.
And that's where I acquired my taste for tinned potatoes.
Oh, no.
Which is great.
Tinned potatoes.
Oh,
how interesting.
You didn't know there was such a thing.
I didn't either.
I didn't
know.
That is great stuff.
Oh, for goodness sake.
My mother eventually sort of got to terms with ground beef, fry it up, and potatoes. She eventually acquired the knack of making tuna casserole. Let us feel.
Yes.
I think in general, though, she didn't have much of a taste, much of a flair for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
When we first came to the University Camp of Canada, that's my experience. It was like Nestle's Quick. You know, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
right. Milk. So I just hated milk for some reason. So by adding the powder to it, I don't like it to drink so a bit. food and
tea, of course, I always drank tea, even as a kid. I didn't really like pop that much. It was okay, the treat, but there's something else you said about food, but some other topic. Transportation. You know, probably should stop down. I recall stuff.
Yeah, that's right. The box of oranges was interesting. So the
Japanese oranges, yes, that's right. We get them at Christmas time only, of course. Mm-hmm. And one box for the whole damn family. Well, it wouldn't go very far. But wooden boxes back then, as opposed to the cardboard.
That's right.
Now. And keep a wooden box, I guess, must use for something. I don't want more.
That's true.
Looking back at it. Or, but the first Christmas we had there at in their house in 49 there, the sawdust burner.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I thought, oh, that's great. That's, so that's that. That comes your incinerator.
Uh-oh.
So there's turkey left over. We finished off the turkey.
Oh, my God.
So we dumped the carcass in the thing. Uh-oh. It smelled terrible.
Oh, my God.
It smelled
God.
Like you're
go through
burning,
the whole house.
Burning bone. The neighborhood is really burning
bone. Oh, my.
It was awful.
Oh, God. Oh,
sorry. It really did smell like burning bodies. Well, because it was. my father's fairly carefree.
He was, yes. Very carefree, yes. He still is, I think. So, what happened with the, I was trying to get more about the flood, but you said it flooded down.
Okay, flood. Okay, the place did flood anyway, mainly from rains, what I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
I don't, and then of course those bended ditches, they fill up, right?
That's right.
I'm not sure that, I really don't recall it having anything to do with the Highbury Tunnel specifically.
Right.
But when you think about it, it's only a few blocks away to Highbury, where you were,
right.
And the drainage ditch was straight along, maybe that would make a difference.
Right.
I do remember the ditches were improved, and they put in culverts. That would be the early 60s sometime. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly when.
Yeah, the Highbury Tunnel finished in 62.
Okay, that's more than around. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also they actually repaved our road around the same time. I mean, it became so much more uptown.
Yeah, right.
They put a street light, you could see it and all this stuff.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Now, when the guy in 47th, when he sold his land,
mm-hmm.
they put it in 48th, they also put in a lane between my parents' place and 48th. I remember the things of the city asking, well, do you want the lane in the back here, or do you want to keep the land that's there? Because if you want to keep the land, it is the city's, but we're not empowered to take it without asking.
Mm.
So if you want it, you have to pay $160 for your share. So he had, well, so, that's not worth $160, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about 20 feet of land.
Yeah, right.
Times 100 feet wide or 100 feet wide. And God, I can't believe that he did that. Next door neighbor was a guy called Rolston. He worked at the UBC as a kind of a janitor, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
What's interesting about him is he, next door neighbor to my parents, he'd built his own house.
That's nice. Mm.
And he had nice American cars every so often. He'd get a new one maybe 4 or 5 years. Being impressed with that. We had a couple of German guys, German families living in the block, the Eckerts and the Renzingers. The Eckerts are a bit odd. Renzingers, but their kids are too young to me, really. They were nicer, though. The adults were nice.
Mm-hmm.
There was a certain amount of prejudice from the war.
Yes, right.
I don't remember much about that, except that at Southlands, I remember drawing a swastika on my eraser.
Hmm.
My mother suggested I shouldn't be drawing swastikas. I shouldn't say why.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my babysitter. Well, we had a babysitter when I was 10, at least.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the neighbor, Heidi Eckert.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd grown, of course, in Germany before the war. Which is telling me what a good guy Hitler was. I mean, well, he was bad in places, but he did, good roads, good hospitals, stuff like that. He looked after his people. So,
right.
So there you are.
There you are.
Depends on your perspective.
Isn't that interesting?
Food. We didn't have a lot of tin stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember being quite impressed when you go to a supermarket, you see mm-hmm. so many tin things.
Mm-hmm.
Frozen stuff without a question. What did impress me first coming to Canada is my father's recruited for UBC, the head of department, Frank Noakes, that's engineering, had bought a fridge, I think, for my parents.
Okay.
For the family. So we arrived at the fridge, and the big deal is you put a block of ice cream in the freezer.
Oh.
And I'd never seen that.
Is that right?
Well, in England, I mean, it's just, it's hard to...
It was really difficult, wasn't it? Right. It was
hard to believe it was that bad, but it was.
It was.
It got better, of course, quite rapidly after that. By the early 60s, it had changed. But, you know, it was pretty rough the first, I guess, 10 years after the war.
I think so. Interesting.
Very good.
Oh, well.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
Oh, one last thing. Sorry.
Oh, yes. Yep.
One last thing. Okay. Well, I'm remembering too much now.
That's but, a good.
Okay.
Okay.
Speaking of pop, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I do remember the old Crush, Orange Crush place on 4th and Alma. Mm. And then the Kick Cola, Hires Kick Cola, 4th and Stevens, I guess it was. 4th and Stevens, yeah. Mm. And then the Coca-Cola plant had...
No, that was an air.
No, no, at... Cornwall and almost at Burrard, Cypress business.
Oh, okay.
That was the Coca-Cola plant. And Arbutus and Broadway, that's right, the McGavin's factory.
That's right,
factory.
Yeah.
Big loaf of bread on top.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Don't
right.
say bread, say McGavin's.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I've taken enough of your time.
Oh, okay.
When I think of more stuff, I'll write it down.
Sure, yeah. Anything good. We have...